doesn't happen just like that. Rather, one gradually becomes purified, goes through the stages of anottina vritti, first by doing bhajan, bhajana kriya, by performing sadhana, chanting, following the rules and regulations, studying the scriptures, etc., applying this knowledge. Then gradually, the anartas within one's heart, there are six preliminary anartas, and then further anartas, unwanted things are removed from the heart. And then, when one's heart is more or less clean, clean means free from the modes of nature, the lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance, then, and only then, can be one can be fixed, steadily fixed strongly in devotion, devotional service. Otherwise, it's this side, sleepy, this side, material desires, sleepy material desires, being buffeted around like a small boat in the vast and rough waves of the ocean of the material world. That is what the lower modes of material nature do to us, the happiness, the sadness, the this, the that. Continuous. I like it, I hate it, I like it, I hate it. Modes of material nature. All this, of course, is described in the Bhagavad Gita, how the modes buffet us. In the 14th chapter, it's described. In the 17th, 18th chapter, it's described in Bhagavad Gita. So then, after the platform of nishtha, when one is situated more or less in goodness, and anartha has been nivritti, have been finished, then bhakti bhavati naishtiki, one is fixed. And then at that point one can actually have a taste, experience a taste of the sweetness of Krishna's of Krishna's holy names, etc. And then that taste thickens into attachment, then rati comes, or bhava, or love dawns in the heart, love for Krishna, and then really one is liberated from the material world, but yet one's job is not finished. And one, because bhakti is called prema ankur, it is just a sprout of prema. It is compared to a sun, bhava is compared to a ray of the sunshine of prema. So wonderful is prema bhakti. So therefore, and then the heart vidyate vidya grantim, the knot in the heart is cut, chindante sarva samsaya, and all doubts are finished. And then all material work, chiyate chasya karmani, all material work is completely finished. All karma, the bondage that we have, karma is finished. And then one can actually see Krishna. Dvisva evam atmanishvare. One can see Krishna at that time. And that is glorious. So after explaining all this, this process, which answered some of the questions. So we read the complete first chapter, the questions, and the second chapter answered four of the questions, and we've already done two of those, and we're going to briefly go over those quite soon. And it described this wonderful progression that we can expect to pass through, either slowly or quickly, as we make advancement in Krishna consciousness. This is our heritage, that which we are inheriting and that which we will go forward to. And then, and of course, the essence of all this has been described as performing Bhagavad Bhakti Yogita, the essence has been performing devotional service to Krishna. And then in the last verse that we read, Sutta Goswami says, Ato vai kovido nitya. That every kovi, every truly wise person will always, nityam, always what? Bhaktir paramayo muda. He will always, therefore, because this is what happens when one renders devotional service, either in the sadhana or practice stage or in the perfection stage, is wonderful. Therefore, every learned person, bhaktir paramayo muda, will render devotional service to bhakti, to Vasudeva Bhagavati, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead with great relish. Kurvanti atmarpa sadinim. And he will experience great satisfaction of the heart in doing so. Because this is the connection that everyone is truly longing for. That connection, the heart-to-heart, soul-to super-soul connection with Krishna. That is what everyone is longing for and grasping for, to no avail in the material world. So, after describing all this, the glories of rendering devotional service, there's the next section, which goes from text 23 to 29, answers the question, because that verse, that last verse that we read, was bhakti paramayo mudha, that one should render devotional service to the para tattva, because that para tattva has been described. The para tattva means this, the absolute truth. So bhakti paramayo mudha, that brings great, great delight. So who is that Lord that one should commit himself to with full bhakti? Bhakti means devotional love. So who is that one who we should give our devotion to? Who is truly worthy of it? If you ask some people, they'll say the country. Some people say the family. Some people will say the gods. Some people will say the God. Everyone has an opinion about this. So here, Sutta Goswami, in this section, is going to describe who should be the object of bhakti. So, in 23... he begins by saying, describing the three modes of material nature, by saying the transcendental personality of Godhead, because the Lord, and that has been described, who is that Lord, has been described to some degree already, and it's going to be described in the more and more, because the whole purpose of this section and the next chapter, chapter 3, is going to really be established that the Paratattva is ultimately the Supreme Lord, is ultimately Krishna, that he is Krishna, he is Bhagavan Swayam, he is the original personality of Godhead. So that original personality of Godhead, whose name is Vasudev, also, Vasudev, the son of Vasudev, he is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance. And just for the sake of the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction, he accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So this is the typical understanding of Westerners as to what is Hinduism. There's three gods, like something like the Trinity in the Catholic Church. There are three gods, Brahma, Vishnu, and they can't figure out what in the world is going on and what the theology is. Is it multi-theistic? Is there one god? Is there many gods? Is there no gods? impersonalist. So no one can actually understand what it is because they've learned it improperly. So here, this verse describes that there are three modes of material nature. There's the Supreme Lord, and He is only indirectly connected with the material world. And out of those three modes of material nature, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. So what's going to be presented in this section is that one should worship Vishnu. Because Vishnu, even though seemingly in the material world, is actually always transcendental and always spiritual. So in the next verse, describes why should one worship Vishnu, and it describes how firewood is a... I'll read these verses quickly. Firewood is a transformation of earth, but smoke is better than the raw wood, and fire is still better. For by fire we can derive the benefits of superior knowledge through Vedic sacrifice. So when you're thinking in terms of performing a sacrifice, there's fire, there's wood, and there's smoke. The wood is like the mode of ignorance. You don't want the wood. You can't get the result of the sacrifice just from the wood. And passion is compared to the mode, is compared to the smoke. So it's closer to what you want. But what you really want is the fire itself, because the fire itself, which is compared to goodness, one can get the actual result of the sacrifice. So similarly, the point being that one should worship Vishnu, who is the predominating deity of the mode of goodness, because by goodness one can come to realize the absolute truth, which is the purpose of all kinds of worship. And therefore, continuing, previously all the great sages rendered devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Bhagavatam Adhokchajam, because He is beyond the material world. And they worshipped Him for themselves to become beyond the material world. Just like if we want to, if we are a prisoner, there is no use asking another prisoner to free one, because he himself is caught. Unless he has the capacity to get out, how can he get us out? So similarly, therefore, we should follow the sages who worship the personality of Godhead to get free from the material world. Then in 26, who will therefore worship Lord Vishnu? Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. So those who are serious, and this actually is the watermark for those who are strong devotees, is they want to get out of this material existence. And then they therefore worship Ekeha, Vyavya Satmika Buddhi, Ekeha Kurunandana. They worship in a fixed way. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and His plenary portions. That's who worships and who doesn't worship. Those who are in the mode of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers, other living beings, and the demigods who are in charge of cosmic activities. For they are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. So when one wants to enjoy in the material world, one worships one thing. And when one wants to get out of the material world, one worships something completely different. And if one wants to get out of the material world, one must take shelter of Lord Vishnu. And then, in a very nice and important verses, 28 and 29, it's described that this Vasudev is actually Vishnu, and it is only, very clearly is stated here, that only Vasudev is to be worshipped. Vasudeva Praveda, Vasudeva Paramaka, Vasudeva Parayoga, Vasudeva Parakriya, Vasudeva Param Jnanam, Vasudeva Param Tapa, Vasudeva Parodamo, Vasudeva Paragatim. So this verse describes, it is in the revealed scriptures, that the only object of the Vedas' purpose is to worship Vasudev. The purpose of yoga is to attain Vasudev. The purpose of all karma kriya is to attain Vasudev. The purpose of all knowledge and tapasya austerities is to attain Vasudev. And the purpose of all dharma, religiosity, is also to attain Vasudev, because he is the param gatim. He is the supreme goal. So then, in the next section, we've already read this section, it describes that Vasudev and Vishnu are the same. And this next section, which we've already read, was an answer to the fourth question of the sages about the Lord and his interaction in the material world. So the one by one, Karana Dakshai Vishnu, Gaba Dakshai Vishnu, and Kiri Dakshai Vishnu are described. This is Vasudev, this is the Supreme Lord, Vasudev is Krishna. This is how Krishna enters into the material world. He creates the material world, he pervades everything within the material world, because there is nothing outside of him, and he is in everyone's heart, directing them. Yantra Rudhani Maya. This material body is like a machine, actually. A most miraculous and marvelous machine. But it is only a machine. It is worked by the soul under the guidance of the super soul. So Krishna, in the form, he comes as these three Paramatmas. Karana Dakshai Vishnu, who creates everything, Gaubhadakshya Vishnu, enters into the universe, then Kiridakshya Vishnu becomes the all-pervading super soul. So he's creating a situation. The Lord is creating a situation, on one hand, to satisfy our desires in the material world, because we have our material desires. Give us a playground, so to speak, in which we can exercise our playing tendency. And also, and more accurately even, it is to give the sadhakas, he creates this material world, to give the sadhakas, the devotees who are not yet on the prema platform, and therefore are not eligible to go back to Godhead, an opportunity to increase their devotion. So therefore Krishna so kindly, out of his causeless mercy, really for the devotees, it is meant for the devotees, the material world, so they can perform their sadhana and come up to prema. So Krishna so kindly does that. And then, and therefore, in the last verse, which answers the third question, why does Krishna himself come? And it says he performs his pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. All the avatars do this. They come to help us get out. They perform wonderful, wonderful pastimes to help us get out, to grab the consciousness of the living entity, to give the devotees something to think and talk about and preach about. Because by thinking and talking and preaching about Krishna, then the mind can be absorbed in transcendence even within the material world. And by having, and this is really Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy and Srila Prabhupada's mercy, that we who are not pure enough to always think and talk about Krishna, there's a wonderful, vast preaching movement that can connect all our material tendencies to preaching and therefore to Krishna. So it is such a gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. In previous ages, previous times, the sadhus, they would live far, far away from everyone, practically speaking, if you wanted to be. And the people who, they would live in the forest, and those who wanted to approach them, they would have to go out into the forest to find the sage or something, or someone like Sukadeva Goswami. It describes that he only comes to a householder's home for how long? The time it takes to milk a cow, to get some milk and go. Something to maintain himself, his body and soul together, and to give a little blessings, some spiritual knowledge. In and out, no entanglement. But Prabhupada kindly set up a movement where everything, so many material things can be used in Krishna's service, our material abilities can be used in Krishna's service. Yukta Vairagya. Very wonderful. Or we can use everything, all our tendencies in Krishna's service, but what we have to give up is that tendency to be the enjoyer and the controller, which is very, very deep. It sounds easy, it glides smoothly and swiftly off the tongue to say that, but it is very hard to give that up, the false ego. So then, in the beginning of chapter 3, after describing Krishna comes to save, bring, to liberate those who are already so pure, liberate them from their misery of separation from him more than anything, because those who are in pure goodness, they don't suffer ordinary miseries, but to capture them and free them from their missing him deeply. So Krishna comes. So now in chapter 3, after finishing that, Sukta is going to establish how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything, even the Vishnu and Narayan forms and all the avatars. There are so many avatars. So he's going to describe in this chapter many things, many personalities. And then it is really to make the point how Krishna is the source of them all. But also, the fifth question of the sages was is about the incarnation. So he's answering that question. So this first verse in the third chapter is a very important verse. But I won't exactly explain why now, but we'll explain that 2 days from now. But it's an important verse. I'll explain a little teeny bit why, because it hints that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or it lays the groundwork for that. So, Sutta Uvacha, Jagrahe Purusham Rupam, Bhagavan Maharadibi. So to establish the material world as we have just described, the Lord, the Purusha, Jagrahe Purusham. Purusha means the three Purushas. Well, first there's Karana Daksha Vishnu. Jagrahe Purusham Rupam Bhagavan Mahadibi. So this Purusha, who was also Bhagavan, he begins the creation of the material world by creating the ingredients. That's the first thing, the Mahat, Mahat Tattva, or the Pradhan, Mahat Adibi. And then Sambhutam Sodasham Kalam. Then the 16 other ingredients come, because these are the principles that are false ego, etc., and the modes of material nature, the sense objects, the senses, etc. These are the ingredients of the material world, the mind. And then Adal Loksha Shushuksha, for the purpose, with the intention of creating. Now he is always transcendental. Although he, in the form of Karna Daksha Vishnu, creates the material ingredients, he is always beyond them. And then in the second verse, I'll read these verses quickly. In the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus at first, there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. Second, these next verses describe Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, 2 through 4, and then something about Kiradakshaya Vishnu. A part of that Purusha lies down within the water of the universe. So this is actually what we see over here in this, on the cover of the Bhagavatam. There's Vishnu's inside of universe, Vishnu lying down over here with universes coming out, and it's explained over here. And this, the numbers are 4, 5, 6, and 7. I remember when we first, now we're used to seeing this, but in the very early days when we saw this explanation of the creation and material existence, it was most astonishing and wonderful. How Lord Vishnu lies down and then he himself, as a plenary portion of himself, enters in the universe and lies down with the Shesha, lying on Shesha, and Lakshmi massaging his feet, and from his navel comes a lotus flower and Lord Brahma takes his birth. This is certainly very wonderful. So a part of the Purusha lies down within the water of the universe. And I remember when I first read this, it was after when I was in the university. I had just taken a course on Hinduism or something like that, and there were parts of the Rig Veda where, and there was the famous Purusha Sukta, which begins Sahasra Sirsa Purusha, the multi, unlimitedly headed person. So I remember reading that and not being able to, for the course, and not being able to understand anything, having no idea what in the world I just read. And then after that, the next year or so, or the next semester, I can't remember now, reading this part of the Bhagavatam and saying, now I understand what it was talking about. Because one needs to hear properly in disciplic succession. So from this Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, his body sprouts a lotus stem. And from the lotus flower atop this stem, Brahma, the master of all the engineers in the universe, becomes manifest. So Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is there. It is believed that all the universal planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purusha. But he has nothing to do with the created material ingredients. His body is eternally in spiritual existence par excellence. Although he creates everything, he has nothing to do with matter. Or rather, he has an achintya, bheda-bheda, relationship with the material world. He simultaneously is everything and completely aloof from everything. How could you be everything, create everything, control everything, ultimately, and still have nothing to do with that very same thing? This is called achintya shakti. So this point is established immediately, that he is transcendental, although he is doing everything and he has done everything in the material world. So what have the devotees seen of this Vishva Rupa or Virata Rupa of the Lord having expanded everywhere? This is described in the next verse, which is this. I remember this verse specifically. This is very much like Sahasrasira Purusha, Purusha Sukta. The devotees with their perfect eyes, they see this. They see the transcendental form of the Purusha, who has thousands of legs, thighs, arms, and faces, all extraordinary. In that body there are thousands of heads, ears, eyes, and noses. They are decorated with thousands of helmets and glowing earrings and adorned with garlands. And when Arjuna sees this universal form, he's terrified, because it includes everything. He sees that all in one place, ekastana, on the body of Krishna. And he loses his composure. But still, because he's such a powerful Kshatriya, he can still offer his prayers, but but he doesn't fall down to the ground. So this Garbhadakshay Vishnu is being described, continues the description here, which also hints at Chiradakshay Vishnu. Is this form, this Garbhadakshay Vishnu, is the source and indestructible seed of all the multifarious incarnations, because what Sutta is going to describe here, what he's interested in describing, is all the incarnations, with the purpose of showing how Krishna is the source of all the incarnations. So it's this Purusha that is the source of all the incarnations that he's going to describe. He is the source and indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations within the universe, of so many different kinds. From the particles and portions of this form, different living entities like demigods, men and others are created. So this Purusha, who the source of the Purusha, whom the incarnations come from, is Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and the incarnations come from Chiradakshay Vishnu. So Prabhupada explains that in the purport, actually. He explains. So, there are many, many different kinds of incarnations. These are enumerated in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. There's the Leela avatars, when the Lord comes to the material world for the purpose of performing some particular pastimes, like Lord Nisringadev and Varaha, like that, and Matsya, Korma, like that. And then, so that's one kind of incarnation. Then there's the Guna avatars, which what we heard about very, very short duration about them. The Guna avatars are the avatars in charge of the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, which is Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. Then there are the Manus. They're also avatars, Manvantara. There are 14 Manus in every day of Lord Vishnu, of Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma lives for 100 years, so there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these Manvantaras. They're empowered to rule the universe. And then there are the Yuga avatars. The Yuga avatars are for every Yuga. There is an avatar that describes the Yuga Dharma, etc. Krishna also, and Mahaprabhu also came as a Yuga avatar. And then, so those four are there, and then there are empowered souls. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. Then there are empowered souls, which are called here vibhutis, or sometimes they're called avesh, where the Lord empowers. These are indirect, because they are not directly the Lord, but they are empowered by the Lord. The other avatars are directly the Lord. So these, they are Shaktavesh. They are empowered, they are jivas, but empowered with Krishna's Shakti. Avesh means enters into. Krishna's Shakti enters into them. So examples of them are the four Kumaras and Prithu Maharaj and Shesha and so many, Parsaram, and I think Vedavyas. These are examples of these empowered souls. So now, starting with the sixth verse, so all these incarnations, they're the Purusha avatars, and all of the incarnations come through the Chiradakshay Vishnu. So now we will start hearing about the incarnations. Now, the order that they come are given. First, there's the four Kumaras. Would anyone like to speak? Who is the four? Did anyone have the four Kumaras chosen? No. But this, when we get up to the third canto, there's really very amazing description of Lord Brahma's what's called the Vishaga, the secondary creation. There's the Saga, the primary creation, where Krishna creates the ingredients. Then there's the Visaga, the secondary creation. And in the secondary creation, Lord Brahma takes the ingredients and he manifests different things for them. And you, one could see, the first thing he does, he creates after the universe is sort of ready, he wants to populate it. So the first thing he does is create the four Kumaras. And he said, my sons, you please populate the universe. They immediately refuse. They say no. And then, so you see, one after another, he creates one thing that's good, and then there's another thing that gives him trouble, and then he creates Lord Shiva. He becomes angry, and out of that, he creates Lord Shiva, who and he's very pleased because Lord Shiva will populate the universe. But then Lord Shiva's population that he starts creating are so dangerous and cause so much trouble, he has to say, you should go in the... We'll use you later when it's time for the destruction. Now you go and meditate the Rudras. It's just from the very beginning of the secondary creation, it's just the same type of thing in one sense that goes on now. That one thing good happens, then another bad thing happens, then you're trying to do one thing and trouble happens, and then night comes, and then this problem happens, and then you have to cast off your body about this, and you create some sages and you feel satisfied, and then boom, boom. Good, bad, good, bad. Just like it is in the material world. Buffeted around. You create something, it gives someone trouble. So the four Kumaras, for their higher purpose, they refuse to follow the instructions of their, of Lord Brahma. Then the next incarnation is the Sukar, Lord Varaha. Who is going to speak on Lord Varaha? Are you going to hog the microphone right now? Huh? I was teasing. Okay. Second canto. Third canto also. It's interesting how this is the first incarnation where Krishna directly comes himself, and he comes as a boar. Because a hog is considered a low animal, but when the Lord takes on that form, whatever form he has is completely transcendental. But this is the way of the material world also. Actually, what happened was, right before the Lord came, Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Satarupa were created. This is in the third canto. And they were finally going to be the ones who populate the universe. So Lord Brahma was really happy because they were empowered to populate the universe, and they were completely submissive. So finally Lord Brahma was going to be able to do his service, which was to fill the universe. And then Swayambhuva Manu said, where should we live? I said, on earth. And then he saw that the earth wasn't there. It had fallen into the Garbhodak Ocean. What to do? So then Lord Boar came out of his nostril like that. So is the saga over? No. And then he goes to pick it up and a great demon attacks him. So it goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. Thank you very much. Anyone else had anything on Lord Boar? How about on Narada Muni? Yeah. Who had, raise your hand, you had, who else? Did anyone else have Narada Muni? No? He didn't go to Gurukula. No.
Brahmana school.
Brahmana school? Where does it say that?
In chapter 4.
Yeah? By Narada Muni, so many, he's a big preacher.